They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Who Shout Ya? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio today, this crew, though. Oh, we got a good one for y'all. To my left, I have film critic, host of the Max Fun podcast, Switchblade Sisters. It's the one and only, sometimes it snows in April, April Wolf. April, what's good?
Since I haven't really, like, left the house much lately, I'm going to do something that I watched.
Okay.
A TV show called Vita that's on Stars, and I think it premieres very soon. But it is created by a woman named Tanya Saracho, and it is so good. And if you're an Angelino, you're going to love it even more. If you're a Latina Angelino, you will love it even more. But still, for me, is like this, like, white woman from the Midwest, I was like, yes, I get this. I feel this. And that's such an amazing thing to make such a specific story that is so universal that I loved it. It's so good. Vida.
Yes. We pronounce it Vida. So
can you give me a little language lesson one more?
Vida. And Vida? I believe Tanya Saracho, I believe she's from Chicago. So shout out to Tanya Saracho. That's what's up. Also in the building, the one and only, she's back with us. It is the dope rhyme-sayer, Drea Clark. Yeah.
Whenever you do that, I want the morning news.
Like, oh, my God.
The morning show.
All of them, all the noises. The horn.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That makes me feel better. Similar to April, what's good with me is a television show that I actually learned about from Who Shot Ya listeners, and I feel terrible because I don't remember their Twitter handle, but when we were talking about something else in a thread, they had suggested this and it stuck, and it's a Japanese reality show called Terrace House that has taken over my life. It is so good. It is the construct of it is similar to The Real World. It's six strangers chosen to live together, except for things never stop being polite and getting real. They stay fully Japanese. And the cultural insights from this show are mind-boggling. Plus, the people can leave whenever they want, so the cast changes around. Their courtship style blows my mind. I don't know how that country has any children in it. I would watch a Terrace House in every single country.
Oh, wow.
And it's so good that, and I don't know anyone here watching it, and I have drawn my friend Ken, who lives in Taiwan, to watch it with me. So I'm constantly like, what time is it in Taipei? Wake up. I need. Are you caught up? Are we on the same episode? It's so, so good.
But this is on Netflix?
Terrace House, it's on Netflix, yeah.
All right. Well, y'all listen on that there. Jump on that. So Drea has somebody to talk to, please.
And thank you, whoever suggested it.
Oh, and we have returning guest. You heard his lovely, warm, the dulcet, would that be the right term? Oh. Dulcet tones. Of the,
I was told, sexy as hell.
Okay, let's go there then. Let's go there. Because I was going to say he's known as the Velvet Lawnmower.
It's so good.
He's Mr. Show You Right. If it ain't rough, it ain't right. Let's give it up for Dave White, y'all. Yes. Yes.
Woo!
Dave, ding, 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 ding. What is good with you, sir?
First of all, I prefer to be known as Mrs. Alonzo Doral Day.
Nice.
My apologies.
What's good is my 18-year-old Mazda Protege, which has a CD player still in it. And there are two compact discs competing for dominance this week. I know that makes two what's goods, but they really one and the same. They're two halves of my soul.
Mm.
There's a doom metal band out of Seattle called Bellwitch that I really, really love.
It,
and they have a record.
Is it on my shirt? This is a shirt that has every black metal band in existence.
Oh, really?
Is that right?
Well, it's a year old, so not, depending on.
They are not black metal. They are doom metal, which is a little different splinter.
Gosh, April.
In the world of metal.
It's a little different.
Black metal goes very fast. Doom metal does not go anywhere. It is a sludgy wall of noise. They have a record called Mirror Reaper that I really love. It is 180-minute track, and it's kind of about the death of their former guitarist. It's very mournful, and it's good driving around. at night.
Okay.
Music. But in the daytime, Kylie Minogue has a new record out.
Yes.
And the first song on that record is all about death, too. Okay. So, her second death song after the Nick Cave duet of the 90s. I'm sure everyone knows it.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So the doom side of me and the disco side of me, they meet in the car. And I love Kylie Minogue so fucking much. And I always have. And
That's amazing.
I'm a homosexual. Okay, so.
That was beautiful.
Just a doomy homosexual.
Yeah. That was so beautiful.
I think I want to start a doom disco band with you. As anybody else, can we do that?
Yes.
Oh, so dude, dumb, just right? like sludge yeah. guitars going, and yeah, with a.
It would be bumping. Yes.
Hey, Ricky, what's good?
Oh, yes!
It's all I wanted to see in the world. I'm gonna leave now. This was fun, you guys.
It's
Bye.
Been a pleasure. I'm out. everybody, you know, every once in a while, my close personal friend will ask me, why do you always do dope shit, Ricky? And I'll say, close personal friend of mine, Barack Obama, I'm glad you asked. Because the dope shit that I got to do last night was I got to enter the 36 chambers with the RZA in attendance. I went to the Palace Theater at downtown L.A. last night. The RZA has a roadshow right now, a traveling movie roadshow, where he is showing Enter the 36 Chambers, a beautiful print of it. And then he is on stage with two other gentlemen, and they are DJing the whole movie. They've taken the original score out, and the RZA just goes through all Wu-Tang songs, sometimes just the Wu-Tang originals, you know, from like where the samples are coming from. I mean, it's literally the soundtrack by that the RZA, y'all. Shout out to my Wayne by Empower people out there, but that's what's up!
Did I miss this already? Did this already happen?
I think, Las Vegas next.
I have to go kill myself now.
How do you find out about music? I don't have places to like find out about shows and concerts anymore.
This one in particular was I go to the Echoplex for like special events. And one of the companies that puts together the event at the Echoplex, this is just like something they were doing at another location. Footlong Development. Shout out to Footlong Development. You know what I'm saying? I'm just giving shout outs today, y'all. Sponsor
us. Paid?
Yeah, also. Shout out to Cafe Butelo. No se me olvidó, you know? Also. But yeah, that's what's good with me, y'all. Oh, go support your theaters that show kung fu movies where the RZA will show up and play. Because it was a dope evening. On today's episode, we're going to talk about I Feel Pretty, plus we'll be talking about Hollywood's unconventionally attractive actors, and as always, we will have our staff picks. But first, it is time for a news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. I will read a news blurb or headline. April, Dave, or Drea will jump in with their take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? Let's get started. This next story, this is one that we have been waiting to talk about, I believe. A lot of hot takes going to be coming in. There's a lot going on in this story as well, so you should look it up. Do your research after we go through it on your own. Actress Allison Mack, who is on Smallville, was arrested earlier this month for recruiting women into a sex slavery cult called Nexium. One woman she tried to recruit was none other than Harry Potter star Emma Watson. Hashtag I stand with Hermione. People magazine uncovered a series of tweets from Mack, who attempted to recruit Watson to what she called an amazing women's movement and a unique human development. Is this important? Do you care?
I have so many questions.
Yes.
First of all, my first question is, what is an Allison Mack? Secondly, if you are Allison Mack, aren't you going to go for someone, as Laura said earlier, on The Flash, instead of someone way out of your lane, like they're on a different level, okay? Emma Watson doesn't know who you are, doesn't answer her own emails, doesn't look at her own Twitter. Someone else is handling all that, so you're not even getting through to Emma Watson.
She's trying to bag the Tom Cruise of Nexium.
Exactly. And other things, like, Is this? Why does it have to be sex slavery? Can't you just have a chill sex cult like the Source Family? Remember them from the 70s with the restaurant, and they were like, and they had the they all had like great outfits, and Father Yod, and he had died in a hang gliding accident. It was a big cool documentary about him.
Seems
that
like
was a great sex cult.
Like, I don't think that one was as cool as you think. Any sex cult with the ratio,
chill.
when men are allowed to marry 50 women and women cannot have the reverse. I don't know how chill that was.
You do have a point. You do have a point. You have a point there.
There's something wrong there.
They ate excellent food, but
why must guys who start these cults always turn it into sex slavery? Why can't it just be free love?
You know what? What else is there to do?
I guess.
I don't know if this was like a meme that someone made up or something that actually happened, but I love this meme. It's probably something that someone made up where Allison Mack is like, at Meryl Streep, would you like to live deliciously? I was like, please God, let this be real.
They get higher profile takes. I will say the true bummer of this is the genuine level of gross depravity that this ring got up to, like the amount of women, not to bring the room down, but it is legitimate. There were so many women involved in this and like kidnapped and trafficked. Like it's a very real.
I don't know enough about
very
this
very gnarly.
That's
but it's just
very
so,
bad.
So
very, very bad.
Gross.
I didn't realize it was as bad as it was until I just started to see the story pop around more and more.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
Yeah.
And it's always for a dude that looks like that guy. That you're
always.
Wait, who are these women? You can do better.
Oh, shall we move on to a happier story?
Yes.
Shall we do that? Director Ava DuVernay was so excited about J.J. Abrams' new hire in Star Wars Episode 9, she took to social media to share the news. She posted a pic on Instagram of Abrams with his new second unit director and the caption, quote, "Happy to share this historic news, a black woman directing stories in a galaxy far, far away." First unit director J.J. Abrams, second unit director Victoria Mahoney. Now, Mahoney's directing credits include Queen Sugar, Claws, American Crime, and Grey's Anatomy. So from television to second unit directing a Star Wars movie, that's what's up. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes.
Yes.
There's so much second unit directing that happens in these giant movies that it's huge. That's how Anna Forster started getting directing jobs, too. And she directed the last ill-received Underworld movie. But still, she's a great director. And she was doing special effects and cinematography and got her start that way. So, like, Vic Mahoney is, you know, taking that huge, pivotal step up in the next direction to be, like, a helmer of a series like this.
Yeah.
I agree that it's, I love it as a step. It did have shades of that small, like, oh, we're so hungry for crumbs that, like, because, you know, like the posting of, you know, like everyone celebrates when they announce the second unit director.
Right.
And they're all crucial components of a filmmaking team. And I am excited for Victoria and she'll do a great job. And hopefully what that leads to is her just getting to be, a first unit director. But like J.J.
You know,
Abrams.
Colin Trevorrow got to do.
Exactly.
Again.
And so, yeah, it's the small, like, I have a little sort of crumb on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. Can I make that a thing?
Like, yes.
Okay. You get what I mean with that.
Yes. Yes. A chip, but a crumb.
Yes. Oh, aren't we so lucky? Look at what they've given us. Crumb on my shoulder.
Anything that contributes to breaking the dude stranglehold is better than not something.
Yeah, it just takes so long.
Yeah. Well, John Travolta has worked with many great directors over the years. Your Brian De Palmas, Quentin Tarantino's, Terrence Malick. But who was one of his favorites? Former lead singer of Limp Bizkit turned director Fred Durst. TMZ stopped Travolta on the street, and he elaborated on the experience. Let's take a listen.
How was it working with Fred? How was that experience?
It may be my favorite experience I've had. He's so generous, and he's such an artist, and he allowed me to create a character that nobody else would allow. I mean, it's really a wild character, and I felt very free to do that.
He hasn't felt free ever.
The movie is called Moose, and it's based on Durst's real-life experience with an obsessed fan who will be played by Travolta. Is this important? Do you all care?
Well, if you look at all the directors that he's worked with, like, they're a lot of mean dudes. So, right. like, maybe this was the best experience. Like, maybe Durst right. is just, like, a very kind person. And he's just like, oh, wow, this is very different from me.
Can I share my Fred Durst story?
Yeah. Well, so, I wish you would.
Yes. This is the only time anyone's ever asked. So one of my first jobs here was working for a rather horrific event producer, and I was assisting on a music video show, and I was like helping like wrangle talent and like, can these grown people get from their car to this part of the red carpet, and it's a whole thing. And I had on my headset and I'm carrying bottles of water to give them or whatever, and he was one of the people I had to meet at the car and then escort to where he was going. And it was at the, I can't remember, but it wasn't far. But he could hear this person yelling at me so hard on the headset that it was like echoing. Like he could hear it standing next to me, just like the, and I'm like, cool. Yeah. Like it was just horrible. It was embarrassing. And also you're just full of all the resentment. I'm like, if you weren't so incompetent, you wouldn't have to yell so much right now.
Yeah.
And so, and I go and I'm just nodding at him, trying to pretend he can't hear. And I go to hand him the bottle of water, and he just looked at me. He took my headset off, gave me back the water, and he was like, why don't you have a sip of this for a minute?
Oh.
And just so you know, you're doing a great job. I feel very well taken care of. He was so nice to me, and this was for sure in the middle of the, I can't even remember any of their songs. I'm the worst. I was going to do a solid, like,
That's what I was thinking as well. That's Kid
Damn
Rock.
Damn it. Yeah. Lamp. Same thing.
I'm not the biggest Limp Bizkit. Oh, they did the Faith, that terrible
version
of Faith.
Yes, you got a Faith.
Nookie.
They did it all for the Nookie.
You're all fans. But so he was so, like, legitimately nice and, like, and he did not need to be, like, the amount of people who are indifferent to the PA type that's walking with them, like, that's an invisible, Fred Durst.
So, like, he is a very kind person.
Genuine dude.
And, he was probably telling, like, Travolta was probably telling the truth. Like, this was the best experience on set I've ever had.
Also, Fred Durst has the funniest sex tape.
Oh, my God.
How does it rate against Colin Farrell's?
Farrell's sex tape is actually kind of hot.
Yeah.
It's because, also very kind.
Because
he's so complimentary.
Because he's Colin Farrell, and he's nice to the lady.
Yeah.
Fred Durst, also nice to the lady in the video, but he says really, he has funny sex talk. And we quote it all the time at our house. Like, at breakfast.
Here's a Fred Durst story. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Has anyone ever asked you about this Fred Durst story?
Well, I think we're going to take a break and talk about our favorite, funniest sex talk. And when we come back, we will talk about I Feel Pretty, y'all.
Welcome, everyone, to the live wrestling spectacular in Los Angeles.
So far, the world's most boring wrestling podcast has been destroying the competition.
Isn't there anyone who can save us from this travesty?
Wait, could it be?
It's Tights and Fights, the perfect wrestling podcast.
Tights and Fights is here to save us from the monotony of boring wrestling podcasts with hilarious conversations.
Woke trips through the history of wrestling.
And joke about the finer points of people wearing spandex.
What a match!
And the Tights and Fights podcast will be back every week.
Thursdays on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts. Please, these hosts have families.
Tights and Fights podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio today are
Drea Clark,
Dave White,
April Wolf.
Today, y'all, we are talking about the Amy Schumer joint I Feel Pretty. Drea, You've been dying to give us a brief synopsis of the film, so could you please?
Practically begging. You guys, sit down and let me do the synopsis.
Gather around.
Come around, children. I Feel Pretty is a romantic comedy about, what's her name?
Amy Schumer.
Renee! Duh. Okay. Thank you.
Because she had Thank a necklace you, Ricky that said Renee, so I was like, remember
she
her
wore
name.
It the whole time. Duh. Yeah. Okay. I Feel Pretty is a romantic comedy about a young lady named Renee who lives in the big city and feels not super great about herself, kind of living that average life. Mm. And through sort of magical movie means, she starts seeing herself in a way that makes her believe that she is truly empirically beautiful in the eyes of all who see her. And it allows her to feel more confident at work, which is at a beauty company, so that you get a lot of that juxtaposition. And she works her way up. She meets a fella who's super won over by her personality and confidence. And then, of course, movie magic strikes again, and it's taken away, and lessons are learned. And beauty is, you know, just really turned on its head-ish. I Feel Pretty.
There it is. Boom. Thank you, Drea.
Mostly?
That was absolutely okay. Right. Yeah,
oh, yeah. That's right.
That's I really the movie thought I you saw. Were all giving me this nod as like, hello, you forgot the whole thing about the dog. Like, there was some story I forgot.
She turns into a robot. You're just going to glaze right over the robot part?
Hello, Mars?
Yeah. Now, since the trailer came out, there's been blowback to it because, exactly like you said, Drea, Amy Schumer's character, she starts to believe that she is beautiful and skinny. That's where she's getting her confidence from. People are saying that's a problematic thing. Did we feel that way when we were watching the movie?
Well, the film also says that's a problematic thing too, to an extent. Mm-hmm.
I would disagree with part of what you just said. Mm-hmm. I think a crucial read on it, because in talking of like how I perceived what the movie was telling me and how other people, I think if this is twisted for you or if you saw it in this way, which you very much are rightfully could do, sweet sentence, but basically...
it's perfect.
Yeah, thank you. Nailed it. For me, when she goes through her transformation, how I read it was not that she saw her body or her face looking any different. It was that she saw that with the removal of her own criticisms and with her removal of expectations and was like, oh, I look incredible. Like, how wonderful. You know, when you have, because everyone has that themselves, they have that best friend that you're like, what are you talking about? It can be a small thing from like a pimple or a haircut. And you're like, you look fine. You look nice. Or, you know, like the self. And she, it's like, to me, the movie magic of it was taking away that whole filter. I didn't think that she saw herself as thinner. I didn't think she saw herself as more, you know, like, oh, cheekbones and big, weird, puffy lips. I didn't think she was seeing any of that. I thought she saw, like, because she's touching herself. Like, she's grabbing her tummy and shaking it. And I thought she saw it and was like, oh, this is the good stuff. And the liberation of that, like, I could, in my darkest moments, weep over something. Like, oh, can you imagine having that flick or that, you know, clicked in your head? And so, because I saw it that way, I didn't see it as a critique of, oh, Amy is like a delusional, that it's only good if she thinks she's skinnier. Does it make sense?
Like, no, totally. For me, one of the things that I actually liked about the movie is when she looks at herself in the mirror, we never see anybody different. It's not like, oh, there's like this supermodel there, and that's who she sees. So that I get what you're saying.
It's not like Shallow Hell.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And she doesn't change how she's dressing. No. She's, you know.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It literally is like a whole confidence. She just has this brand new confidence that she's exuding.
The film allows you to think about it in either way, though, because you could read it as she is simply seeing herself as she is and suddenly understanding that she is beautiful. Mm. But there are moments, and this is in the script, where she says to her friends, I know you don't recognize me. Mm-hmm. And I think, when she said that, I thought, okay, well, so I'm hearing this as she sees an entirely different person now. And so that was actually a little confusing for me during the film. I felt it was a flaw in the movie that we weren't ever really knowing what she saw or how she saw herself. And if she knew it was you know, because she bonked her head at SoulCycle or what she thought caused it. Because the film doesn't tell us.
And it kind of thinks it does, too, which is crazy because there are a couple really emotional scenes. The push-in shot of her staring at herself in total disgust at the beginning.
At the very beginning,
I found so evocative. I was like, I am heartbroken. I've had that moment. I think everyone's had that moment of just like the loathing and sad disappointment she's giving herself is so huge. Like, for me, that's why I was on her side. Mm-hmm. But you're right with the like rules of the movie magic, because that's, I found it equally heartbreaking when it like lifts and she sees herself and she's like, no, it's gone. I don't look like that anymore. And it's a really, to me, it was really effectively sad. But you're right, that and her whole thing that people won't recognize her was was the thing. I'm like, I don't know if all those rules make sense.
In that moment, she actually says, the spell is broken. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you knew it was a spell?
Well,
like,
she knew it was a... Because remember she went to the fountain?
How are we meant to think
fountain?
About this? Right.
And then she... Yeah. You know, there's a whole
thing. She wished in the fountain because she watches Big. And then,
which Big also is, there's a lot of rule problems with that movie. I mean, that's one of those things, like, this movie felt a little bit like a throwback to me.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the makers of Never Been Kissed, right? And and if you think about that and, you know, that kind of era of filmmaking, which I think was 1999, to me this seems like it could have been made back then as well. Which in some ways is kind of charming because it's not supposed to be, I don't think it's supposed to be like a laugh out loud comedy. You know, I think it's supposed to be like a thoughtful romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. I wish there would have been some more laughs, especially from like Adie Bryant because she's so funny.
Right.
She's so funny. And there were times like in the theater where I was like watching it and I was actually writing a joke where I was like, oh shit, you should have said this here. And you know, and I was, it's just, you know, some missed opportunities, specifically with her character and Busy Phillips too.
Oh right, yeah, so charming. Yeah, I totally agree. I do think that there's some nice humor to it, and you know, like it's a light, easy watch, but it's not like guffaw laughing. And she's a comedian, and so you kind of want a little more of that. And then there's other things of there are, like I said, there's tone things and story things that I don't think they that I'm like, I don't know how consistent that is, because there are small things of. Like, first off, that girl is getting whistled at by construction guys. Like, I don't care what she's gone through, right?
Yes, yes.
And so,
Amy Schumer, Schumer's character?
Yes. Yes. And so, you know, there's a bit where she's walking and a construction manager behind her whistles, but he's whistling for, like, work. And she turns around and is like, stop! Yeah. And I'm like, no, that guy would have always whistled at you. And so, for me, I'm like, well, if this is your thesis, then, like, in this new version, you know, old her would just assume that, oh, he wasn't whistling at me, he's whistling at this attractive woman down.
Yeah.
And new version is like, oh, that's for me.
Yes.
Whereas they went a whole other way, which is the same thing that I'm like, I don't know if they always knew what exactly those components...
There's a messiness to the logic, and that's either important or it's not. You know what I mean? It's like, this is a film that needs to be in the world, a concept that needs to be in the world, and if the execution is not great, it still exists.
Yeah.
And it felt authentic. I'm genuinely relieved you guys had this reaction, because I saw this with a friend of mine over the weekend, and I was like, I'm super nervous. I'm going to go in. I'm not nervous. I don't give a shit. Fuck you guys. Fuck you guys. I'm right. You're wrong. But I was like, I don't really want to sit and tell them, like, emotional reasons of why I Feel Pretty is a good movie, other than, you know, it's an enjoyable, nice watch. But I was like, this feels like the movie that's like chum in the water for a certain kind of viewer or critic of, you know, there's a lot of easy things to dismiss. And because of the early stuff that had come up with the trailer, that I was kind of worried about not being able to take away the important things that are in it, which I think are true. And I loved Rory Scovel, who plays...
Rory Scovel's great.
He's the best. Hilarious. Best dude in the world.
Hilarious.
And like so good in this. And it's the perfect... His beta male machinations at that dinner party, like, were such a beautiful... But I also liked, even with that, like, it's this nice thread of his insecurities and, you know, that everyone has these. And then also, you know, seeing someone who's Because you've had that too, of being drawn to someone just for like their personality and their not just for, because it sounds so dismissive, but you know what I'm saying.
I agree with what everybody is saying, but I wasn't as nice to this movie after I saw it, because I was just confused on rules alone. Like you were saying earlier, Dave, I was like, oh, I don't know how I'm supposed to be feeling or what the movie is trying to tell me. That another scene that doesn't involve the beauty aspect, but the one you just mentioned where Rory is like imitating the dude who's eating. I was like, now why does Rory have any beef with this guy, or why does he feel anything? We've never seen them in a room together. There's never been like a moment where that guy has been like intimidating to other people. The other times we've seen him, it seems like, oh, I think this guy might want to hook up with Amy Schumer.
Right.
Because she's so confident. So, and he's not being a jerk to anybody. So is she just going to fall for this like
dude? Oh, sorry. I'm talking so much. Someone else? No. I loved that scene because for me, that was a great show don't tell. And the idea of a guy like Rory's character who goes to Zumba classes and, you know, has all these things in his. It literally described himself to her as being, oh yeah, I'm just like a beta, you don't have to worry or whatever. And meeting this man who is famous, handsome, stacked, like regardless of if he has any idea if they've spent time together. That's why they didn't need a dialogue.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do the weird, normally those, it turns into the Jon Favreau character of like trying to out-macho somebody.
Yeah.
This was the opposite. It's him like, oh yeah, I'm gonna cut this steak just like this guy does, or what? Do you know what I mean? Something kind of funny and absurd.
No, I got all that. It just didn't. It just didn't hit with me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I like
and
that
same
more.
Thing,
just
same thing with how you said with Amy Schumer getting whistled at. Like, I mean, Amy Schumer is like Chicago normal. Like that's just like what a woman looks like. And so it was just hard for me to be like, yeah, it's rough for Amy Schumer. I'm like, yeah, girl, you look good. You're all, you know. That's
yeah, but it's not about that.
I understand.
It's about like the not having confidence at all that women have, you know. There's it felt very honest and very authentic. And I think that, you know, towards the end there's the revelation that what she is, you know, thinking, the her thinking process of like having to be quote unquote a certain kind of beautiful was fucking wrong. And that, you know, then she was like too overconfident with that. And it's just, I think that there was an actual lesson to be learned from that. But I just need to say,
yep,
working for a makeup company, I have some things about makeup that I have to get over where I think it's fun. I resent the fact that I have to wear it. It drives me fucking insane because I have to, otherwise I don't look professional in certain spots, and so I've had to start wearing it. And I hate that they work at a makeup company and like this kind of enduring message of just like, you're beautiful on the inside, but also you should put some fucking stuff on your face. Like it drives me insane.
I was like, I get that she's in beauty in that world because it puts her around models. It puts her around Michelle Williams doing the best shtick in the world. And I'll let somebody else talk in detail about that because that deserves its own show. But what I wanted for her like dismount is when she was doing, you know, the whole final, like, we're all beautiful. This is all of us. It's basically the end of 13 going on 30. Like,
right.
It's the Poise magazine redo. But I wanted her to say, and makeup can be fun. It is a fun way to express yourself. And so this is a line that you can afford if you want to try things out on your face. Because I think that there's a lot of, like, fun positive angles of makeup, and that they didn't touch on any of like the dark stuff of beauty. It was just
it's just
a
like,
vehicle.
We should bring up real quick too the fact that there were criticisms about white feminism and about ableism in this movie, and I think that that should be something that we definitely throw into the conversation.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Hey everybody, I'm ignorant. What is ableism?
It's,
is that like enabling something?
No.
It's like favoring people who do not have a disability, and you know, like not featuring or not even taking into account like something that would be different for a person who isn't completely fully able.
Okay, all
and right. then that and then sense. With that also considering it a less than. So it's
less
the
than,
idea
yes.
of like if you're deaf and you learn sign language, and you can lip read. If it's the thing of people always prefer, you can lip read. It's like they're trying to get rid of your entire language.
Gotcha. Okay, I understand.
To make it easier for people.
Well, the thing of like where a lot of people who write, they always say like wheelchair bound.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When it's like people who are in wheelchairs are. Right. Fine. It's just a different mode of living.
Right. And they're like, I'm not bound. This is how I get around. Yeah. This wheelchair makes me the opposite of bound.
I must have forgotten what element of the film caused the ableist criticism.
That's the thing. I would love to hear from people because there's an article going around that Kristen Lopez had written. Okay. And y'all should maybe take a look at that and see if you share the same opinions. Okay. Kristen Lopez.
No, I do. Right. I haven't read that. I think it's more the idea of Amy Schumer being the vehicle for this conversation can be tricky for some people because she is very adjacent to a Western standard of white European female beauty. That said, I don't think she's trying to be representative of everyone, and
no.
I think the genre she's working in does that. And I also think you're a liar if you really think... Like, I don't think you're a liar, Ricky.
Thank you.
I think you're the best person in the world.
I do talk a lot of shit, though.
You do. You talk mad shit. But there's some... I'm like, no, Amy Schumer, if she wasn't Amy Schumer with her background, with her own chutzpah.
Yes, no.
Amy Schumer is not a leading woman. Amy Schumer is the leading woman's best friend if Judy Greer is not available.
Right. Yes. I understand that. Yes. Yeah, so, I didn't mean it like that.
No. I know you didn't, but I feel like a lot of the criticisms
like we should be
are
honest
like,
about
yeah,
that.
Of yes. like, oh, she's basically a standard generic hot blonde. I'm like, you're a fucking liar.
You're, right.
You're a liar. Right. Like, that's like saying I'm basically Elle Macpherson or an equally... topical blonde model. God damn it, I'm old.
I was just like, wait, is she
McPherson.
Still?
I'm basically Gigi Hadid.
Oh, there you
Hadid.
Go.
Hadid.
Hadid and Hadad. That's one they don't talk about enough.
I'm so young and hip. But you know what I mean? Like, I think there's something, and I liked that about Amy Schumer and the close-ups with her hair back. And like, you know, there is something of like, sure, she is the best friend pretty in Hollywood.
Did you say the white feminism? This movie felt... I never feel like I'm intelligent enough or just knowledgeable enough about feminism to throw my two cents in. But this movie felt very white girl to me, where I was just like, yeah.
What? Naomi
being
Campbell
great
was
for
in
y'all
there.
Here for a second. Yeah. Well, Sashir is hilarious.
Yeah.
She's great, but she's not given much to do outside of be hilarious.
Over the closing credits, they play that Lizzo song that's everywhere now, and I forget the name of it. But in my head, I thought, what does Lizzo think about this film?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Does she see this character and think, yes, I understand this entirely? Or does she think, no, I've always thought my body was great? Like, what? And that's not the film does not concern itself with that at all.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if there's a critique to be made about white feminism in this film, I guess that would be it. What does Lizzo think about this?
You can get a bracelet with that. What does Lizzo think?
Yeah.
I do think this film already is taking on a lot to the point that it's losing us on some of the magic, on some of the logic. And I think, to me, it seemed very pointed that her friends were also white. I felt like it was just sort of... intentionally skirting that issue for good or for bad, because that is its own big ball of things in there. Although, you know what, the casting of it, but I like A.D. Bryant being there. I appreciated so much that she finds happiness on her own or maybe she doesn't with her grouper, but that, but that there's never a moment where Amy's like us girls on the outside.
Right.
And there's not a, do you know what I'm saying? That there's this nice moment of her looking at that photo and being like, oh, I dragged down our photo. Mm. So I can speak for my white experience in the confines of this film that already is taking on the beauty industry. So.
And it's easy to pile onto this film because it's the one that exists right
True.
Now.
Oh, my God. If
it's
this had
like
come
when,
out
yeah,
earlier.
When Call Me By Your Name came out, last fall, as a gay, I heard I heard from many of my fellow gays about every single thing that was wrong with Call Me By Your Name and why it didn't represent me. And I thought, well, you know, you could go to Outfest. There's a whole bunch of other gay movies out there. And it's, if you focus on one film and you want one film to be everything to all people, you know, what you should be saying is, can we have the Lizzo movie?
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And if not, why not?
Well, that's the pitch.
I'll go to your Lizzo movie.
Yeah. That's the pitch.
Well, let's go around. Let's wrap it up here and let's go around. I Feel Pretty. What did we think? Stream it, screen it, skip it?
I think maybe stream it. There's some things with the romance between the two. I like the romance scenes. I thought they were well acted enough where
sweet.
I was just like,
yeah.
I think it's, you know, even just studying it for how to do like a good romantic scene, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess stream it.
Yes. Stream it.
Yeah.
I would screen it if you can go with a buddy and have a nice, meaningful conversation about self-esteem and... And, you know, and bikini contests.
that scene is amazing. Dave Attell.
Oh, my God. He's great.
Jesus. He's great. Dave Attell and Michelle Williams. I mean, like, I want their own movie.
Michelle Williams.
Other level.
The specificity of what she was doing just with, like, her hands in this film. She was staggering.
Yeah,
she's
to
a
me.
Fucking actor.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
An actor.
Goddamn ass off.
Yeah.
Oh, guys, I'm gonna have to say skip this movie.
We're breaking up.
But if you go over to somebody's house and they're like, "Hey, we're gonna watch I Feel Pretty," are you gonna take? You want to hang out, watch that? Absolutely do that. It's not like never watch this movie. But if you don't watch this movie, I think you'll be all right. Hopefully the next one. Hopefully they learn the lessons from this one, and the next one they make, they're like, "Hey, we figured it out."
I also feel I literally am what they sketched as the target audience for this movie, and you are on the other side of that list.
100%. Please put every disclaimer before I talk. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking about unconventional Hollywood sexiness. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
here to tell you about Story Break, a writer's room podcast where every week we, the Hollywood geniuses behind Video Game High School, have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Thrill as we weave the tragic tale of Jar Jar, a Star Wars story.
We're going to double down on everything that made the prequels great. Jar Jar, Trade Federation, politics.
Gasp as we assemble a pantheon of heroes for the Kellogg Cinematic Universe.
We could get rid of Snap, Crackle, Pop. I wouldn't even miss them.
You're crazy.
They die in the second. Act.
Oh, come on!
And join us as we make fun of Matt as he struggles to name a single Beyonce song.
Well, yeah, put a finger on it. Sure, she wants to be Beyonce.
Put a finger on it. Beyonce is the famous song.
Will we break the story?
Or will the story break us?
Find out by joining us in the writer's room every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio are...
April Wolf.
Jay Boyd.
Drea Clark.
Right, for this next segment, we're going to be paying tribute to actors we love who'd be categorized by Hollywood standards as unconventionally attractive. So we're going to celebrate them by revealing our secret, or not-so-secret, admiration of them. Just because someone's on our list doesn't mean we want to let them know our name is Ricky, but it don't mean we don't either. Drea, before we get started, can you give us a more comprehensive definition of unconventionally attractive?
Unconventionally attractive is sort of it is just a dickish term. Because like, oh, well, they're sort of ugly, but I think they're appealing. But it is. It's based on the idea, and these, again, are through the Hollywood filter that I think is just much more critical and glaring than hopefully your average filter. Please be nice to yourselves. And even in that, like I said, is heavily influenced by a very Western, European, white standard of beauty, features, all of it. But then there's also sort of masculine, feminine traits that come into that that are equal bullshit, but also factor in. So what I would say that we're doing for this would be the idea of actors and actresses that are considered like, oh, they're so sexy, but you could make a very easy case of like, yeah, empirically, oh, yeah, well, her nose is huge.
Sure.
Or,
yes.
You know, mm-hmm. like, he's a fat guy. Like, whatever it is, there's something about them that doesn't make the normal thing, but they still work.
Yep.
They still float your boat.
You know what? I'm going to throw a curveball in real quick because Dave replied to an email yesterday. And the
yes.
real talk that Dave laid down right there, I dropped my phone like, that's what my
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
Do you have the quote?
Yeah,
I don't
goddamn
remember.
Right I do. You yeah, goddamn right I do, son.
He got it tattooed on his arm.
Took 14 hours. I'm down. Dave said, I'm down for unconventional hotness, although personally, I don't believe that any hotness is unconventional. I believe that we've all been sold a bill of goods about what beauty is and ain't, and that those with eyes to see will understand Peter Dinklage and Sandra Bernhardt as undeniably beautiful. I mean, come on now.
You already stole two of our names.
And also, I mean, you know.
The emo's conversation involved Sandra
yeah.
Bernhardt
yes.
and Peter Dinklage,
yes.
which is
no.
why
and
I
you're
those names.
Right on
yes.
with that.
Yeah. Dave, do you want to go first? Who do you got for us?
When James Gandolfini died, I thought, oh, God, he was so young. Oh, God, what a great actor. And then I thought, oh, God, he was so beautiful.
Mm.
Because I think he was beautiful. Like, I remember watching The Sopranos and thinking, just take off your shirt. Come on, dude. Just take off your shirt because I need to see more of Daddy Bear on this screen right now. And then sometimes he did. And I would call in Alonso and I'd be like, James Gandolfini just took off his shirt.
No.
And I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks about that. That man was gorgeous. and I'm just being prurient right now. Like, this is not even like, oh, I found him very handsome. No, no, no. Would fuck. And so that is a gorgeous man. And anyone who doesn't agree with me, I don't give a shit what you think.
I love it.
Yeah.
Dave is getting Gandolfini's guts.
Yeah.
Drea?
I wish I don't have the passion for this person you do, but I am Adam Driver. I think Adam Driver has such a curious face, and I think he's such an incredible actor, and I'm almost grateful for that face because he won't have the weird, you know, the like 20 years where like Leonardo DiCaprio couldn't do anything because he just looked like a sort of elfin rich man. And Adam Driver, I'm like, oh, you can do so much, but it's asymmetrical and he can look like he's a dullard. There's all of these things that it's not classical handsome, but I'm like, oh my God, I could stare in those eyes mm-hmm. forever.
Yep.
I mean, and of course he's tall and that's all conventional dreamy, but I think Adam Driver.
That's what's up.
Choice one.
Kylo Ren.
Four shiz.
April?
Oh, I think I had a little crush when I watched Craig Robinson in that Morris movie.
America.
And I was just like, oh my God. I was like, this is like, because he got a chance to really act in that film. And I think he's just a talent who is just not utilized that much. But I was just like, yes, this guy is just so handsome and so glowing and so interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, Craig Robinson specifically.
And
like,
he can sing and he's funny.
Yeah, he's like the full package. He's great.
Well, my choice is, we already heard her name. My choice is Sandra Bernhardt. Mm-hmm. I used to, she's fine. I think when I first saw her, it was either like on Roseanne or when she was like kicking it with Madonna during like the whole like Truth or Dare thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something about like the through line between the two women I chose, like, I just love people who don't give a fuck, you know? Sandra Bernhardt don't give a fuck what
you
think.
She will
tell you what's up.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, she just knows what's up, knows how to carry herself just like Amy Schumer does, and it's fucking sexy, yo. Yeah, and then, like, as time would go on and I would find out about her, I mean, she's funny. She used to write on the Richard Pryor Show and was on the Richard Pryor Show. I was just like, see, you motherfuckers think I'm crazy for like liking this girl where she got space between her teeth, but I don't give a fuck about that. She went on Arsenio Hall Show, and Arsenio Hall was like, you have an amazing ass for a white woman. And I was like, see, I'm just, my shit is just getting proven right and right more and more, yo. So Sandra Bernhardt, shout out to her.
Good, that's a good one.
Well, y'all, it's time for Staff Picks. Every week we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out, any movie at all. Drea, I'll start with you, please.
Okay, so I have one based on the idea of I Feel Pretty, and now knowing Ricky's true love of a woman who does not give a fuck, I'm going to surprise you with, when you watch this, you're going to be like, who knew that I was going to be in love with Barbara Streisand? Because my movie is Funny Girl. And if you want to see a movie about a character who's literally told to her face that she's not pretty and she won't make it because of that, and instead of needing a magical curse, she's like, fuck that. I am so talented. Step back from me. And then you just watch her be so talented. Oh, my God. It is, I mean, Funny Girl. Funny, Funny Girl. Watch it.
I've seen like a minute of Funny Girl, and I would be like, I would let Barbara Streisand know my name is Ricky.
Her voice, it's like stereotypical to talk about her being a great, her voice is magic, like you can't describe, but that woman also has a comedic line delivery and physical comedy, like bar none. She's a fucking star, and it was her birthday 2 days ago.
Okay.
Shout out Barbs.
Dave, what do you got for us?
There's a German film out now called Western, and it's from Waleska Grisebach. I'm sure I'm killing her name. It is about a German construction crew going to Bulgaria to install a hydroelectric plant.
Okay.
Sure.
And
tales old as time.
And it is a film that announces what it is in its title, because the most easy posts to hang it on is like every John Ford movie ever made, because these men and they go to this place where it's all a bunch of other men, and they begin metaphorically pissing on all the trees so that they can jockey for who's going to be dominant. And it's a story about how men in groups are quickly devolve into a shit show, and it's about the tropes of the Western film and how they manifest themselves in a contemporary scenario where no one really has any power, but they're all trying to get power over each other. It's quiet. It's a very slow burn, but it's amazing. And okay. So if you can find it, Cinema Guild, they are the people who put it out. I'm always repping for Cinema Guild because their movies are small and easy to miss. So go to their website and you can find out where it's going to be.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. April.
I tried to theme mine this time because I was really thinking in advance. This one's on Netflix and it's called Tale of Tales, and it's from an Italian director. The picture that sells it is a poster of fucking Selma Hayek, her character, who's like this evil queen. She's fucking amazing in this movie.
Like
eating
a
heart.
Yes.
Like it's a white room, and she's, the production design is like phenomenal, but it's about fairy tales and these kind of reimaginings of fairy tales, but like old Italian fairy tales, which if you've ever read Italo Calvino's kind of fairy tale book stuff, you would know that like shit is dark. None of it makes any sense. And like the morals are like very kind of shady. Like you're not sure exactly what you're learning. So everyone gets punished for something, really. But there's some really interesting things about like beauty in this. And there's also some of my fave unconventionally attractive people, which is John C. Reilly, Toby Jones. Yes. And then there's a guy who always ends up playing a giant or an ogre. His name is Guillaume Delaunay. And he's also a very interesting looking person. But I love this movie. And there's a really great kind of like flesh turning inside out scene, which is like definitely up my alley. but it's also like hilarious. It's so dark and so funny and weird. And Tale of Tales. Like, watch that.
Yeah. And it's on Netflix. Yeah.
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Check that. Movie that I think people should check out. I saw this movie on Sunday, And it took me a while to watch it because it was exactly what I thought it was going to be, man. It was like, we're people, society, we're dumb, and we will get fooled by something as simple as the television. If you say something enough to people on the television, they'll believe it. I watched Ilya Kazan's A Face in the Crowd.
Yeah.
No.
And it was just like, oh, man. That just happened. We fell for that dude right there. Andy Griffith, pre-Matlock. If I was Andy Griffith, I'd be salty about doing Matlock because I'd be like, you guys didn't see that amazing performance that I gave in A Face in the Crowd? I fucking knocked it out of the park. I sing in this fucking movie. I sing my ass off. It's amazing. Andy Griffith plays like this terrible this guy who's found in prison, but I mean he's charismatic as fuck and is just able to fool everyone into believing is just becoming like one of his, like, you know, into sheeple. They become the sheeple. It doesn't end as sadly for him as I'd like it to. It's an old ass movie, so I don't mind going a little spoiler. It doesn't end as sadly for him as I'd like it to, but you know. Oh, man.
He should be punished.
He should have. I wanted something to happen.
This
to
is
him.
Like
yes.
Ricky in 2018, who's just like, punish him.
Yes.
Lock him up. Lock him up.
But it's also, I mean, it's also just like a great movie. It's very entertaining. It looks amazing. It's in black and white. You can just watch and you go, God damn. This movie's in black and white. I wish they were still, like, it was done more often. A Face in the Crowd. It's on Amazon Prime. I think it's like $3 or some shit, so check that out. Hey, y'all, that's our show. That's what's up. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Avengers Infinity War with the one and only Drea Clark back up in the building.
Yay.
What?
Yeah, well,
she's not allowed to leave until next week.
Can't get rid of this gal.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing, would you please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts? 5-star reviews get a shout-out on the show. Last week, we had no reviews. This week, we got too many. So if we didn't read your review this week, we'll read it next week. All right, here we go. Shout out to JC Wood 05. Says, love these three. The banter is good. The intro theme bops. And when the reviewers get roasty, this podcast becomes just about the best movie show you can listen to. Muchas gracias. Dan.Lucas says, this podcast is what's good. As a person who lost interest in seeking out movies outside the occasional blockbuster, this show made me fall in love all over again. Listening to the crew talk movies took me back to the summers when I worked at a video store, where I was introduced to so many amazing films by people who love movies and have fun talking about them. I never would have seen great stuff back then without those talks, and I think this podcast is doing the same for me today. I can't recommend this podcast enough. Thank you, Dan. That's what's up. And finally, Lauren Spark. I moved to rural Iowa for a job, and now as a stay-at-home mom, I often feel alone in my progressive politics and love of film. New episodes of Who Shot Ya? And Switchblade Sisters. Ooh, shout out to y'all. Make my week so much better and keep me from giving in to the loneliness. I get to laugh out loud, hear about films that will never open in theaters here, and find new things to search for on Redbox. Parentheses, yeah, I'm that rural, she says.
It's okay.
Yeah. While my little one sleeps, I became a Max Fun sustaining member this year to keep shows like this up. Thank you. And running, and want to thank you for all the work you do as a part of each show. Also, Ricky, well, look at this.
Oh my God.
Yep.
I can't.
Let me clear my throat here.
Lauren.
Also,
Lauren.
Ricky, I too have a soft spot for Cloud Atlas.
Oh my God. For the rest of your lives.
Well.
Lauren has sparked Ricky's heart.
Shout out to somebody else who knows. All boundaries are conventions. You know what I'm talking about, Lauren. Hey, thank you, Dave, for being here. Thank you, Drea, for being here. Anything y'all want to plug right now?
Nope.
Linoleum Knife.
Linoleum Knife Podcast.
That's
yes,
right.
Indeed. Yes. April, do you have anything you want to plug?
I do.
Okay.
I do a thing called Switchblade Sisters.
Yes.
And this week, you know, we've got Rama Mosley, who's coming up to talk about... The Witches of Eastwick, George Miller's unsung hero of a film. She directed Tatterdemalion and The Brass Teapot. But on May 5th, if you're in Los Angeles, we're actually doing a live show. And it's part of the Voyager Institute, and it's at Resident downtown LA. And ooh. Y'all should take a look at the Voyager Institute's Facebook page to find out when and where. And you can get to see a live taping of Switchblade Sisters.
All right. When did you say that is? May 5th?
May 5th.
Come out to that, y'all. It's going to be be dope. Hey, check out our Facebook group if you haven't subscribed yet. Handle that. You can do it at facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet us at WhoShotYourPod or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that's what's up, Mohora.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.